surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Bud Podcast, not outclassed. Wonders en masse.
Get it on Leinster and run up to the end of the game.
The Bud Podcast.
Podcast. My name's Mark Isles, and I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. This week, and this week only, we are not the one and only Wanderers. So Heston Blumenthal, Gabby Logan, Ian Drury from Ian Drury and the Blockheads, Jimmy Carr, Mary Berry, Luke Donald and Terry Pratchett, you all live in or lived in or were born in Wickham, so we salute you. Cheers to the chair, boys. Now on with the show.
Andy Walker, who lays it to Stubbsy. Stubbsy with a fine pass out wide to the left to Mark Patterson. And he's off and away. A good cross wanted now in the middle. And there goes the goal! Yes! What a goal, that man, Andy Walker! Not, well, literally 20 seconds drop. And what more could you ask for? A superb move there. Well, Stuart, how about that for a start?
And Charlton. Brown again, fine Stubbs. And what a pass there from Alan Stubbs. Beautiful pass, perfect. Patterson crosses it. Derby, good header. It's a goal! Julian Derby! How do you like that one? Superb goal. And really, Huddersfield, you don't know what to do because, let's face it, Bolton have not been doing one more to be attacking this thing down.
Just a little reminder of an upcoming sale we've got on subscription to the Bolton News. Our April flash sale begins on Wednesday, the 17th of April, and will run for just over 2 weeks until Monday, the 6th of May. The sale will mean you can get 5 whole months of coverage from the Bolton News Unlimited articles for just £5. Now that'll take you from the very early summer all the way through, hopefully looking at Bolton Wanderers as a championship club. But it means you get unlimited articles, not just Wanderers stuff, unlimited articles across the whole paper. Other things happen in Bolton other than football. Who knew that? But most importantly, you get access to our subscriber-only stuff, and there's lots of things coming up, particularly on the podcast front over the summer. We are bringing back Stop Press, Bolton Wanderers in the 90s. There'll be a few more episodes of that. We are also bringing some very big interviews as well. We're looking back at the 70s. We've got loads and loads and loads of stuff lined up, all for our digital subscribers. Also, there will be the start of a digital newsletter where daily, on a daily basis, I'll be writing straight to you guys with the very latest from Bolton Wanderers and, you know, a bit of my own humour sprinkled in there, if you can stand it. But anyway, if that sounds like your gig, if you'd like to save 40% off an annual fee as well, then go to theboltonnews.co.uk/subscribe and have a look what we have to offer from Wednesday, April the 17th. Right, it is time to introduce my co-host for this podcast and a man who's currently in hiding in his evil secret island lair. It's Henry Hewitt. Henry, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, not clear audio today where I'm at home. I had to get away, Mark. It's a stressful week with Bolton. I had to leave the country, but as a new dad, I couldn't leave too far. So I'm in the Isle of Man.
In a volcano. So, in your lair, in your volcano.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a very nice volcano. It has a shower and a toilet,
Wi-Fi,
yeah, a double bed, and a TV, but only the first 5 channels and then BBC channels after that. But other than that, no, it's lovely. No, I've been here with my work at the launch of the TT. So if anyone is interested in the TT, I was sharing a car with Peter Hickman and chatting to John McGuinness and all of them. But if you're not interested, to be fair, I'm not really interested in the TT, so it just went over my head. But there will be someone out there who's listening to this who's like, oh, that's actually really cool.
Doing that Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at the telly. Yeah, I recognise that guy. Yeah, yeah. Right, okay, let's get this past motorbikes, because quite frankly, I don't care. Yeah, let's talk about Derby. Let's talk about Wickham. big night on Wednesday. In fact, it's probably a big night on Tuesday because Barnsley slipped up as well. That's possibly them out of the race. But the big one, Wickham against Derby, finished 0-0. It's given Bolton, well, it's in their hands again. Another twist in the tail.
Yes, it is. I mean, yeah, Barnsley have gone, aren't they? They're not
they really
finish
do look
us.
Gone. They really do look gone.
I think it was the result against us. I think that last 30 minutes is clearly... It's clearly knocked them, hasn't it? And since then, I think they've only won one game or something. So, which anyway, we don't care about that. We're glad about that. So, and then Derby last night. You know what, Mark? I know it's a cliche saying, oh, there's plenty of twists and turns in the promotion race and whatever. But I did think yesterday, I thought Derby aren't winning this. We've got one last chance to get above them, and it's going to have to be beating Portsmouth and Shrewsbury. But were you as confident as me that Wickham would do us a favour, or were you more on the Derby will win this category?
Honestly, and obviously I'm more of a neutral than you are, but I kind of looked at the results and looked at the fixtures rather, and I couldn't see Derby. I don't necessarily see Derby winning at the weekend either. Because I think Leighton Orient, especially because they've only got a couple of days, they've had quite a few injuries, Derby, they've got a couple of days. Leighton Orient are an awkward team to play against. So I'm not 100% even. I think there are even more twists and turns to come. That is not to say, Bolton know now that if they win the final four games, they're up, which is all they could possibly ask for. And yes, as people keep on reminding me, Peterborough are in the same boat because if they win their final five games of the season, they are also up. But again, they've got to go to Oxford on Saturday. That is not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. They have had that kind of emotional high of the trophy final and great results against probably the best opposition you could possibly have at the minute in Port Vale at home on Wednesday night. They've demolished those guys. But, you know, they've got to go to Oxford. Again, very short turnaround, really, it's not Saturday, Tuesday, it's a Wednesday, Saturday, so it's not easy, that, at all. So I think there are twists and turns to come. I think everybody's trying to climb on top of it and say, well, I think this will happen, I think this will happen. I tell you what, you're better off just going with the flow. That's the way I look at it. I've given up trying to make predictions now.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm in the same kind of boat as you, where I think, you know, I'm manifesting at the moment us beating Portsmouth, looking up at the scoreboard at the end of the game and seeing Derby 0, Leighton Orient 0 or 0-1 or whatever. And then obviously we get into the next thing, which would be, oh, if we beat Portsmouth, we're going to smash Shrewsbury, which, as we know, is not the case. And then we're going to smash Port Vale, and as we know, it's not the case. I think, to say where we were a few weeks ago, if you'd have said, right, with four games to go, it's in your hands. You win every game, you're up. I think we'd have all taken that. So, you know, credit. I'm sure the players and the manager were thinking along these lines, whereas us fans are very emotional and we think, oh, it's all over and Derby are never going to lose again. I'm sure they were thinking, it's not over. Let's just win our games and see what happens. And that's exactly what has happened.
Yeah, and I'm sure from Derby's point of view, you kind of got onto that role. You've got ahead of Bolton. I'm sure their supporters were thinking, great, it's at home and dry now. But there's always a spoke in the wheels. And honestly, if Derby go and they win their final games and they, you know, it ultimately, who goes up deserves it. And until that final game, until it's mathematically out of everybody's reach, same with Pompey. And, you know, I've said it a few times on this podcast, I don't think Pompey are necessarily the best team in this division, man for man, but they are the most consistent without question at the moment. And I think they will go up now. I think that's pretty much over, even regardless of what happens on Saturday. But it is that consistency that gets you there. It's just basically taking enough points, keeping your nose in front. The highs and the lows, if you get caught up in those, I think they're the teams that tend to suffer.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think Portsmouth do deserve to go up. But, you know, I've said all season, I've kind of expected them to drop points. But to be fair to them, they've played the games at the right times, and they've been, I don't want to say lucky, but they've just Bolton have been unlucky, I think, and we've had a couple of abandonments. We've had games called off for international duty and all of that, and we've always been behind in games, whereas, you know, in the total games played, whereas Portsmouth have played pretty much Saturday every week throughout the season. And I think when you do that, it does help, and you do get, you get a momentum without it being overloaded. And I think they've done very well, and they have a sticky patch halfway through the season, but they've come through it, and they deserve to be top. But this is it. I think, like you said there, and I agree, that because I look at it through rose-tinted specs, I think we are the best team in the league. And because of that, I'm not going into Saturday's game thinking, right, we're going to lose, and yet we're playing top of the league. Mm. So it's a weird sort of place we're in, but I think overall, Portsmouth deserve to probably win it, and then it does deserve to be Bolton, Peterborough or Derby to get second place. Probably Bolton and Derby edging it a bit. Mm. But I think where we're all at the moment is probably fair.
Yeah, I don't think it's time to consider playoffs or what might happen if this happens. I think you've just got to keep your eyes on Derby, on second spot, and just go for it. And if it doesn't happen, then you have to deal with that at the time. I think the idea of kind of like mentally preparing yourself for the playoffs is daft, really, because all you're allowing yourself to do is to lose focus, and that could be really, really damaging. But no focus lost on Saturday at Bristol Rovers. I was in Cyprus celebrating my 20th anniversary with Miss Siles, which was very, very nice. I didn't really get to see too much of the game. I watched extended highlights as the best I could possibly do. But not a classic by any stretch, and great to see Nathan Baxter back. But Aaron Collins back to haunt the old Pirates. He's starting to come to the fore, especially after that hat trick against Reading. He's starting to come to the fore at exactly the right time, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and he's he took his goals so well on Saturday, and I don't know what the Bristol Rovers defence were doing, because fact that we had three of them on goal, I was like, because he didn't celebrate, I assumed it was offside, because it was that easy that he got the ball, and then he obviously wasn't. But it was, I think it was, ironically, it was a Derby performance, I think, where we weren't necessarily, because we said before, Bolton, if they win the game, they're the best team. And if they're not the best team, they tend to lose or draw. We don't tend to grind out results. And I think we did on Saturday. And the fact it was 2-0 as well, which eats into the goal difference of Derby. It was a real good performance, and a solid performance. And also, it was great to see Nathan Baxter back as well.
It certainly was. And it was great to see at the end as well, the penalty. And I know Aaron Morley's had, we may talk about him in a bit, but he's had a funny old season. Hasn't really been given a chance to get to top form. But when he has had those chances, you've not really seen the very best out of him. But he got a moment at the end, thanks to Cameron Jerome's rapid pace, rolling back the years to win the pen. I just wonder whether that could be a thing to spark off Morley as well. A high-pressure penalty, you know, tuck that away, happy days, gets his moment. And now maybe we see the best of him too.
Yeah, hopefully, because we're going to talk later on. There may be a midfield spot on Saturday that is free, so he'll be wanting that, as well as Dempsey. And this is it. When you look at our centre midfield, when you write their names down, along with Thomason and Magoma, we've got a very good centre midfield, and this is it for Morley. Is that Morley could probably walk into the vast, vast majority of League One teams, if not all of them. Obviously, with Bolton, the situation we have is that he's not been playing, but he's got the security of a new contract, so he doesn't need to worry about any of that. And maybe it is. He's just had a kid. He's probably tired. I know that he's probably very tired. So maybe there's just a few things on the outside that is just affecting him at the moment. But that goal will do him a world of good, and hopefully we can see him back at his best.
So looking at the table as we sit here then, so Derby are now, in fact, I'm going to look at the table actually properly rather than just trying to remember what the table looked like. How about that? We'll do it properly. Yeah, Derby in second spot, 83 points, 43 games played. Bolton sitting in third at the minute. They've got a game in hand on Derby and they are 2 points behind on 81. Then you've got Peterborough. They've played 41 games and are on 77 points. So they've got to win pretty much everything, Peterborough. And obviously, it's still in their hands as well because they play Bolton on the last game of the season. As people keep on reminding me, I'm guessing it's 2 from 3 there now. But with your Peterborough hat on, Henry, how seriously do we need to consider that one? Do you think they're very much still in the hunt?
Yeah, I think. I suppose Sky Sports would love Peterborough and Bolton to win the remaining games, and that'd be a promotion playoff.
Absolutely. But I'm not sure I fancy it, though, to be absolutely honest.
No, no, I don't fancy it at all. And as it was, well, I told you on the before we recorded, I've messed up with it all. My wife said, "Well, should we take our son away for the first time? Should we go to Spain?" I said, "Yeah, that's fine." She went, "Because we kind of, there's a house for us to go to out there, so it's not, you know, we can stay as long as we want."
Evil
there. She's like, "Well, why don't we stay?" Yeah, evil there. I've got my Isle of Man one and my Spain one, my Costa del Sol one. Yeah, she went, "Well, why don't we go on this day and then not book anything back and we just come back, you know, when we need to?" And I was like, "Yeah, fantastic idea. That sounds great." So I was busy at the time and she said, "Well, we can fly out on the 20th of April. There's an afternoon flight." And I said, "Yeah, whatever, book it." Then she says, "Right, so it's Saturday the 20th of April. I've booked it at 4:30. And I was like, "Oh, great, 4:30. That means that potentially we could be going into a game with Port Vale where we actually, if we win, we could get promoted. And I won't know about it for 4 hours, which then means that I can't go to the Peterborough game, which then means that if we unfortunately do get in the playoffs, it could be the fact that we're there that long that I don't get to the playoffs." But yeah, so I've messed up with that. So I'm hoping actually that everyone else loses, including Peterborough. We win our next two. And then we just really need a point against Port Vale. I don't know how it would work, but if that's possible, and we go 4-0 up, and I go on that flight knowing that we're promoted. So that would be the best scenario for me.
In short, the pressure of the League One promotion chase has forced Henry Hewitt to quit the country, ladies and gentlemen. That is what has actually happened. It's an exclusive here on The Buff. It's got too much for him. I'm going to go and support Costa del Sol United, he said.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you... Malaga have got a really nice kit, actually, the anniversary kit, which they've done the pre-orders and they're selling out. So I might just ignore Bolton until August and then be like, "Oh, we are in the Championship." Or, "Oh, we're in League One." And just completely... I'm a new dad, Mark. I've got enough stress in my life. Bolton, they need to just have an easy end to the season.
The podcast would be really interesting over the summer if half of it just went, "Oh, well, I don't really care about Bolton, but let's talk about Malaga."
yeah, exactly. They're doing a bit of a Bolton, actually. They've dropped down the league. So, now if Bolton do manage to get back to the second tier, I need some team to support who's a bit of a mess.
Well, talking about a bit of a mess, headlines this week. I've been away, so I can't vouch for the quality of a lot of it. But nevertheless, Henry's done his job. He's collated the headlines. We're going to talk about them. This is Headlines.
News. Yes, so headlines today. Oh, Dan Barnes is the best reporter in Bolton. Oh, that's a headline that ever been sent.
Yeah, it's the fictitious Times strikes again. Well done.
I mean, Dan did a good job at Bristol Rovers, keeping up to date with what he was updating us with. But the big one this week is that Santos and Sheehan are a doubt for Pompey. Obviously, you're going to speak to Ian Everett this afternoon, am I right?
That's right. Again, the podcast recorded just before the press conference. Not much we can do about that. But I have a sneaky suspicion, that both of them will be okay. I think that, both of them have been playing with this injury for a while. And obviously it was quite a heavy pitch at Bristol, so it will take a little bit more out. But I get a feeling, a strong feeling, that even if, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we go there and speak to Ian Everett and Ian Everett says, oh, you know, we're still a bit, we're going to touch and go, see how it goes. I'm sure he's not going to want to broadcast his team or to let Pompey prepare for a certain team. But I personally, I would not be surprised if he's got his full strength team out there again against Pompey. This is the one they've been kind of gearing towards. So, you know, touch wood, fingers crossed, because to lose the two of them would be very, very difficult, I think. Tactically, it'd be really difficult. So, let's say in a worst-case scenario, then, that Santos and Sheehan can't play, how does your back three look against Pompey with Santos out the equation?
I mean, if it is the case and they're both out, then I will allow Ian Everett to say we are the unluckiest team on the planet. The fact that
we get into this situation.
The fact that we're in this position and we get them too injured. But I think, well, you obviously Toll plays, no doubt about that.
You've got Taylor back, haven't you? That's the interesting one for me.
Taylor was the guy that they brought in to replace Santos when he was injured. So you'd think that he would play. However, he's played, like less than a game, for us. So we don't know where he's at. I thought he was nervy. When he played against Barnsley, he was nervy, but I could see something in him. So, if Santos is out, you'd think that he'd probably come in. Obviously, the rest of the defence kind of... I think this is it, is that for all earlier in the season, Everett making changes, I think he's set his stall out now for the team, his team that he's going forward with in the next few games. So, in midfield, if it was Sheehan that was injured, I guess it's a choice between Morley and Dempsey. But what about you? What do you think for defence? Would you go with Taylor as well? Or do you think he'd throw a spanner in the works? We go, what a... 6-3-1 formation, but with six up front.
Oh, with six up front, yeah. It'd be very Ian Everett, wouldn't it, to go so gung ho? But no, I think Jack Iredale coming back in and looking quite strong as well. I think he's really played well over the last couple of games, from what I've seen. He deserves his place in there. So we're really only talking about whether Toll sits in the centre, and hopefully Gethin Jones is available and he can play right side of the three. I suppose that's the easiest way of doing it, but Taylor was, as you said before, he was kind of signed to play the Santos role and to give him a bit more leeway as he was coming back from injury at the time. And I do think there's something in that lad that he will be a very, very good player. I just don't think he's managed to get himself up to speed so far. So it's kind of, where is he at? You know, only Ian Everett will really know that, whether he can step in. And it's a pretty formidable attack, isn't it, Pompey? And I'm sure we'll speak about Mr. Yenge and such like later on when we do the preview. But they've got goals in them, Langs there as well, of course. There's goals pretty much right throughout the team. So whoever plays in that back three is going to have to be very, very sharp. You really would want Santos there as a bit of an insurance policy. But if he doesn't play, then, you know, I'd suggest it'd be Iredale, Toll, and then Jones. But, you know, with the wild card of Taylor to throw in there. And then with Sheehan, I mean, you really don't want Sheehan missing because he's been so integral with everything going forward. He's kind of like, he's always the outball, isn't he? You can always find Sheehan and build again and start the process again in possession. And I just don't see anybody else who's capable of playing that as well. Thomason has played that role earlier in the season, but I think he struggled a little bit. And I think he's actually admitted that a little bit in terms of being in that position. He's picked up a couple of yellow cards that he maybe didn't need to do. There's a lot of kind of decision making there that maybe a bit more experience is needed. And I think he's been happier kind of playing more reactively further forward and getting himself up and down and using the energy we know he's got. I think he's been happier since they pushed him forward. Morley is the obvious candidate. And as we said before, where's he at? Where's his head at the minute? He is a new dad, and that always takes it out of you. There's no question about that. He's not had a great season by his standards because he's never really had a great run in the team. And it's difficult, you know, it's difficult to get into that rhythm. I completely sympathise with him. I do think that, as you say, he's a definitely top grade League One player, and I think he's capable of going playing higher up. But he probably needs that run of games to be able to show that and to prove that. Sheehan's been that good this season that you haven't been able to make a case for Morley to come in and do it. But one thing's for certain, if there was a free kick or a penalty or whatever in the 89th minute to win the game against Pompey, I'd be bringing him on special teams. He's definitely that kind of guy. So, you know, having him out there, having that extra set piece threat full stop might be a good thing anyway.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, we just need every game to be on Sky for the rest of the season and he'll score.
It'll be brilliant next season when they're all on Sky anyway.
Yeah, we're going to make millions on him. Yeah, it's... I do agree with you. I'd be very surprised if they're both out. I'd be very surprised if Ian Everett says, no, they're both fine and ready to go. I think there will be a bit of umming and ahhing over it, knowing full well that they are playing. I think we'd have kind of heard a bit more of it. If it was a big injury, I think we'd have heard more of it, or if they were both out. But no, I think they both will play, and I think somebody put a stat on Twitter this week about how many clean sheets we've had with Santos and without, and we've had a lot more with him. Yeah. So he does, you know, I know there's still some of the fan base that are a bit, you know, see him as a bit Marmite and don't quite click with him. But I think the stats speak for themselves, and we are better with him.
Just the style of play, that's the thing. It's 100%. Yeah. He embodies, and to a degree, I think Sheehan now embodies the style of play that Ian Everett wants. And maybe that's the thing. Some people don't like that. I accept it. But nevertheless, it's what they're going to play. So if you're taking two of the most important components out of it, it's going to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully they'll both be fit. I'm sure they'll be fine. Right, moving on to the next headline, and it is Baxter. We've mentioned him before. He's back, and it's difficult to say whether Coleman wouldn't have made those saves, but Baxter definitely made an impact in his game against Bristol Rovers. He kept us in it at a sticky point, and it reminded me of the Exeter game where just after half-time, obviously we know what happened there, and we went 2-1 down, whereas with Bristol Rovers, Baxter made a few good saves and kept us in it. So, were you surprised to see him back that early? Do you think, you know, and do you think it's tough on Coleman, or do you agree with what Everett did?
Of course, it's tough on Coleman. Who would have thought we would have been discussing this a few weeks ago? I suppose it is a little bit, because I don't think in the previous few games that Joel Coleman had done a sight wrong. But I think in the hierarchical structure of Bolton Wanderers goalkeepers, I think everybody knows that a full fit Nathan Baxter comes back in and he's number one. I think even Joel Coleman would probably recognise that. But the good thing is, I think from Coleman's point of view, is that he's kind of repaired any... Or a lot of the issues that potentially came up when he first got thrown into the team, and we've talked about that lots. There's lots of kind of reasons that Joel Coleman did not hit the ground running, and some of them are not even his fault. So, yeah. You know, we've moved past that one. I think when he's had enough game time, etc., he's been shown to be an able keeper at League One level, no question. So I think we can move on from that. But I think Baxter, I think you're right. He makes those crucial saves. He's brilliant that he's hit the ground running. He's not missed a beat. Also great to see him talking confidently about, you know, his time out as well. You know, there was a lot of things said about whether or not there'd been bust ups, whether or not there'd been masses of difference of opinion, and as I've said on here, there was certainly a time where the club said, well, look, you can do this if you want and soldier on to the end of the season and get it sorted, or we have to sit on it and Baxter's picked the latter. You know, his advice was, listen, you're going to have to leave this wrist be for the time being, or else otherwise you could end up missing a good chunk, and he's got to look after himself in some respects. That has happened. That's fine. But, you know, that's football. I mean, those sort of decisions go on all the time. I mean, Santos has been playing with his calf injury for quite a while. He's had it patched up. Sometimes you do yourself harm. That's the bottom line of it. I think you can play on with injuries sometimes, and sometimes you probably shouldn't play on with injuries. These are decisions that professional footballers make all the time, and sometimes they don't come to the public light a lot, and people are discussing about players' form, and, oh my word, he's gone off the boil, hasn't he? But actually, they're playing with injuries that maybe we don't even know about. It is actually a pretty tough world at times, particularly at this stage of the season where, you know, you can see the finishing line. There's only 4 weeks to go. If I can just get 4 weeks to go, you know, I can try and make an impact. So, yeah, I think it's great to see Baxter back. I'd love to see Deion Charles back as well at the same time. Certainly would love to see him back in some respects on Saturday. But most importantly, it's great to see the impact it had on the team, because I think the confidence that coursed through that back line on Saturday, a clean sheet, Baxter's back, the fans, you could tell from the reaction of the fans, they were happy to see him as well. So I think that's the important bit.
Yeah, it's I think, yeah, Baxter had such a good season for us, that he did not many mistakes. You think of the goal against Wigan, but that was, and there's not many that he's made, so he's been very solid. And yeah, it was disappointing to see him injured, and I think it just threw everything out of the water a little bit with Coleman coming in. And like you said, Coleman at times, it was tough, the pressure he was under and what people were saying about him, but it's only natural. You lose your number one and everyone worries. Mm. Would we be further up the table if Baxter had played the full season? You've got to argue that we probably would be, but that we can't prove that. And overall, Coleman has, you know, Coleman's left, left the number one spot and gone back to number two, and we're within touching distance of second. So he's not done too bad. He's not been too bad for our season. Mm. But yeah, it is great to see Baxter back.
Let's have another headline.
So this has been rumbling on social media, and it's the row about Portsmouth and the ticket allocation. Mm. For those who don't know, that Portsmouth have been just given the upper tier of our away stand. And that was a few weeks ago. That wasn't recently. That was when they only got given them amount of tickets, which they sold out very quickly. And Bolton have started selling the lower tier of the South Stand. Mm-hmm. The Portsmouth fans are understandably upset. Bolton fans are pointing out that Portsmouth have never sold out Bolton away. So it's not like the club can look at previous history and go, well, these lot, if it was a Leeds, you'd go, okay, there's something behind it, but it's not, it's Portsmouth. What do you make of this? Because this has been, obviously, the fans have a pop at each other and fans like to wind each other up, but this has been rumbling on for a few weeks now.
That's just straightforward. It's straightforward football decisions. If it were the other way around at Fratton Park, there is not a cat in hell's chance would Bolton be given a massive allocation. It wouldn't happen. Because psychologically, no. Why on earth would we want an entirely full standard? It's not like, you know, sometimes, and I guess under previous ownership, you might well have seen two tiers of Pompey fans and laughing all the way to the bank. But if you are not under financial obligation, if you're not under financial pressure to try and get in every single buck you can possibly get, then why not give yourself an advantage, any advantage you can give? Of course you would. It'd be folly for any Pompey fan to say that it wouldn't happen on the other way around. You can make the argument about, their away support in the past. Let's face it, nothing's been riding on most of the games that they've come to Bolton with. It's a massive trek. I applaud everybody that does anything like that, especially if it's a midweeker. I'm never going to have a pop at how many fans. I think it's a crappy argument. You know, just love your club. Doesn't matter how many fans there are. And you know, Fratton Park, you know, they follow them extremely passionately. It's a really, really difficult place to play. I love going down to Fratton Park once you've got through the gate. That I don't like the guy on the gate, but once you're in the other side, it's not too bad. I think it's a silly argument. It's just a social media thing, isn't it? Bottom line is Bolton have got this kind of little run of three games now. They've got 23,000 home supporters that are going to be in the ground. Probably more now. I think that midweek result for Derby has probably prompted a few more people to say, right, there can be something riding on this. And the crucial thing is that really the supporters actually have got a role to play. The crucial thing is that the supporters can influence what is going on. And it has to be absolutely as partisan as Fratton Park is down there for Podby, because they get so many decisions down there as a result of just the human nature of being a referee, being an opposition player, having that kind of pressure on them. And I think Bolton have had that at times, but I think there has also been times where it has kind of wavered a little bit. And I hope the message, is a strong one now for everybody to try. If you go into that game on Saturday, make your voice heard. There was a meme that went out last night that I retweeted that I must have glued that together about. It looks like I did it about 20 years ago because the graphics are terrible on it. But anyway, it's Bruce Rioch. It's a speech from Bruce Rioch before the playoff semi-final against Wolves, and he basically says, "I want you to appeal for every throw-in, every corner, every free kick, every single thing that could possibly be turned in our favour, because that's exactly what Wolves would have done to us." And I think that's exactly the situation that it has to be for Bolton this weekend. Pompey do that at Fram Park. They're brilliant at it. Now you have to do it to them.
Yeah, I did feel that the game earlier in the season, which they beat us, I only watched it on telly, but it did feel that it was kind of a cup tie atmosphere from Portsmouth. I think this is it, is that the game on Saturday, it's a cup tie for Bolton more than Portsmouth. Obviously, Portsmouth have the carrot that if they win, they get promoted and champions. But they need one win out of the last four. So it's not do or die for them. If they don't beat Bolton, they just go again next week, and that's the week where they can do it. Whereas for Bolton, it's do or die. And we know that if we win, we, at the very least, will be in a position on Tuesday to go into second, with a win. So, yeah, in theory, you'd say that Bolton possibly have that more do-or-die attitude, or I hope we do. It's a massive game, and it's we've spoke all season about Bolton don't win these big games and big atmosphere games. Well, this is the one of the biggest we've had for a while. I know you were going through them, and Barnsley last year, but it was a playoff game, it was a big game, but we still had the second leg. You know, this is it's kind of a one-off game in a way. The players need to stand up. They've got something to prove against Portsmouth. Obviously, as we'll discuss later, if Santos does play, he's got something to prove against one of their players. The players need to be up for it and ready to go. And the fans need to also be there with them. And we've all got a big job to do.
Let's have another headline.
So Ian Everett has been talking about, how he feels Bolton will do for the rest of the season. Of course, we're back in winning form now, an unbeaten form. He thinks that Bolton can win the remainder of our games. We've got three at home and one away, and end strongly. You can't argue with him at the moment.
No, and Nathan Baxter said very similar things. It can beat anybody, and I'm glad to see that confidence coursing through the camp, because that's when Bolton play at their best, when they're feeling indestructible and can play the ball around with confidence. So yeah, I think that's exactly what has to be the case for Bolton. Can they do it? As I said at the top of the show, I expect there to be twists and turns. I am not 100% certain that Bolton will win their final four games, but nor do I think they will have to win their final four games. I have a strange feeling there's going to be other stuff happening. We could be in a scenario, and it'll probably play to Pompey's favour, of course. I'm almost discounting Pompey in my head, but I think there could be a scenario on Saturday where none of Peterborough, Bolton, and Derby have won their games. That's how tight it's getting. It could be. Who's to say? Everybody's saying, "Oh well, we're not going to win our final four games. It's in Peterborough's hands." Peterborough. At what stage in the season have you looked at Peterborough and said they're going to win their next five games? Never. They're so up and down at times. They're a really young team. They're a fantastic team when they're on the stride, etc., and when they're playing their own game. But in certain types of games, they struggle. That's the long and the short of it. It's the same with Bolton. When Bolton are playing at their pomp, I don't think there's many teams better in League One. In fact, I don't think there's any team better in League One. But we've seen them when they're struggling, and it's sometimes really tough to watch. So there's gonna be more twists, and the pressure that is on these players at the minute, you know, and that probably makes what Pompey has done even more impressive. And I take my cap off to them because they've kept on grinding results out and happy days. I've got no issue with the way that they've gone about their business. It's the other three, and you can see signs of pressure on all the other three in the last month or so, and I'm glad to see Bolton looking like they are coming out the back of it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the irony, is that if we beat Portsmouth on Saturday, then everyone's going to assume we've won the remainder of our games. As I said before, it's not as easy as that. So the irony is, if you don't want to see another team celebrating at your ground. We've had it with Chelsea when they won the Premier League, Leicester won the Championship at our ground. You don't want that. But if Derby and Peterborough don't win or they lose, then it might actually do Bolton. The irony is, it might do Bolton better to lose, because then the expectation goes down for the Shrewsbury and Port Vale games, and then maybe they become more cup ties. Whereas if Bolton win, then everyone's going into the game thinking, right, well, we've won them, so we've just got to concentrate on Peterborough. So, obviously, I wouldn't like that, and we'd be talking maybe next week about opportunities lost, but. It's the twists and turns of it all, and as I said before, Bolton were in a position where we were like, right, it's playoffs, and I'd expected that. I looked at Derby's remaining games initially and thought, well, they'll win all of them, and then when you get closer to it, you think, well, Wickham's tough, and then they've got Cambridge to play away, who were, you know, going for promotion. Carlisle have suddenly become very unpredictable since he got relegated, and they play them last. And as you said, Leighton Orient are Richie Wellens loves the underdog tag. So, and they beat us at their ground.
Agent Prattley, that's all I'm saying. Agent Prattley.
Hey, it'll be a lot of fans will suddenly respect Darren Prattley a lot more than what he did when he played for us, if he gets the winner in the last minute.
I'll be texting him before the weekend's through.
Oh, good lad. He's a good lad. He's a good egg, is Darren.
He certainly is. So
if Bolton do get to, if they do win the remainder games and get to 90-odd points, you've been crunching some numbers. Obviously we know now if they win the remainder games, they will win, they will get promoted. That's a fact. But say they do drop points somewhere else, how many points can they maybe afford to drop?
Well, I mean, it's a complex one. It's probably more complex than I made it sound in my piece, to be honest. There's a lot of maths behind it, and the bottom line is that if you were to get to 93 points, since League One was rebranded 18 seasons ago, and discounting COVID as well, if you'd have got to 93 points, you go up automatically on 14 of the last 18 seasons. So I think what Ian Everett said would be, we'd be really unlucky not to go up if we got to 93 points. And he's right. I think that is fair. But now it's a case of, if you get to 93 points, you're up, because you will have won all your games. That's in their hands now, of course. The interesting one potentially is that the second place teams in League One, they've averaged 88.5 points in all the kind of the complete seasons. And so for Bolton to get to that, they need kind of 4.5 points, which I think is well within their remit. But it possibly hints that this is a slightly higher than average season for points overall. And particularly on the top three, it's starting to emulate what last season looked like, where you had three teams finishing on 90-odd points, which was unprecedented in recent years particularly. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, I think, was it 96 points they had, which is ridiculous. Mm. 96 points and then didn't go up. I mean, that's certainly misfortune for you. But another one of the little quirks that came out as well, and I don't really want to consider it, but let's just say that we often think with playoffs is that the third place team are the most vulnerable one because you've just missed out on automatic promotion. You know, maybe psychologically that's been damaging for you and that often they drop out. I always think of MK Dons whenever I do that one because they were such a good team, but unfortunately kind of missed out with a decent, I think they had 90-odd points, 91 maybe, and then completely collapsed in the playoffs and now they're playing in League 2 football. But actually, the third team, and let me just double check this, the third team is 10 out of the last 18 seasons, the third team has gone up. So that's not a terrible ratio, to be honest. It's not a terrible ratio at all. So I think even if Bolton were to finish third, there is a lot of merit in keeping that momentum, you know, or keeping that kind of confidence that they can. They're still the best of the playoff teams. So, you know, again, you go again, it just means they've got to work for another month.
and Mrs. Isles doesn't want that.
She's had her holiday now. She can't complain. She's yeah. We've done that now. I had to do it obviously on the occasion of the anniversary. So I had no choice over the timing of it. But no, that's they can't complain now. It'll be a couple of days away at Wembley Travel Lodge potentially. That's the summer holiday for me.
Oh. You old romantic. So you've been as well looking at Bolton's biggest high pressure games, ever of recent years. Where does Portsmouth rank?
Last 10 years. So. The feature was last 10 years, just off the top of my head. I mean, there's no science behind it, really. I was thinking about games that we can potentially put Pompey into context. And games over the last 10 years that have really mattered and had pressure going into them. Now, this is different from being a memorable game. So, let's say, for example, the Nottingham Forest 3-2. Everybody, if you're going to run a straw poll of Bolton fans, best games of the last 10 years, that's probably the best one because of the way it finished. But actually, going into that game, it wasn't a particularly optimistic place. I think if you wind back and listen to the Buff from back then or whatever I was doing back then, you know, a lot of it after that Burton game was very downbeat and we were praying for a miracle, really, because Bolton looked spent. They'd lost the last seven games. So in a sense, that was not as pressured. I think the most pressured game, full stop, was the Crawley game, where they kind of got to the stage where it was, you know, do it or get off the pot type of thing. They'd gone on that massive run. Sky cameras were in. It was a crud place to go and play football, Crawley, but they pulled out of the bag and obviously went up in League 2 in front of no fans as well. You look at Peterborough at home, Parkey's team. They had to do it on that final day. They'd stuttered a bit, got that false start against Port Vale, but they did it. Fantastic. That was a pressured atmosphere. The nerves, honestly, before that game were sensational. Everybody was white as a sheet. I think Barnsley, home and away, but more probably the away game. I think the home game, there was quite a lot of confidence that they'd beat Barnsley, to be honest. I felt, especially among the fans, it was quite a positive atmosphere before that game. And then by the end of the day, the way that it turned out, it was a lot less so. I think there's a lot of nerves. And then again, a bit like we're talking about Pompey in the allocation, there was barely any tickets given to Bolton for that away game, wasn't there? Again, a couple of thousand maybe. But why did Barnsley do that? Because they wanted the advantage. Of course it is. That's just the way it is. But I think that would be my fourth one. Third and fourth one, if you will. And then I'd say that Wembley, potentially, and Plymouth. I don't think there was a lot of pressure in terms of...
No.
The season wasn't going to fall apart if they didn't win that game. But actually, there was a lot of pressure having got all the way there to put a punctuation mark. It was almost like I think I said in the piece, did the Papa John's trophy matter? Well, yes, but perhaps in a more superficial sense. It did matter, but it mattered to the story rather than mattering, you know, physically to the season. Is that fair?
No, I'd agree with that. I think it's it was a nice day. It was great to have won. Obviously, if Bolton would have lost, it would have been a massive disappointment. But yeah, it was just there was no desperation with it to win. Maybe in some people's eyes, going off the Stoke, to finally lay that ghost to rest. But other than that, it was just a day out. So yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, this Pompey one feels more like you kind of Morecambe away, if you remember that one promotion season, or Salford, a really, really like hardcore, going to be a tight game. You know, it's going to be won by one goal or another, but we will see. It could end up a 4-3 thriller and completely turn things on its head, but I've got a feeling that it's going to be settled by one goal. Anyway, right, that's enough of headlines.
Is that Philip Moraes? Emails, actually.
Right, so we're going to just skip to one of the features we've been asking for. I had a few emails in this week, but I'm going to have to bump into next week now. Apologies. Dear Mark and Harry, this one's from Simon. We did ask for best players who have played against Bolton Wanderers, and Simon's given me three examples here. Don Rogers for Swindon in 1970. Swindon won 3-0. He said he needed a second ball on the pitch as nobody could take the ball off the Swindon maestro. Rodney Marsh for QPR in a game that finished Bolton 6, QPR 4, 1969. He says, on a pitch that would be called off today, Rodney was the only player who could stand up in the ice. Superb balance and touch. And then Ozzy Ardiles for Spurs in 1979. It's amazing to think these players were gracing the Burnham Park pitch, but Spurs 2, Bolton 0, best 90 minutes live I've ever seen by any player. Ardiles owned the ball and merely lent it to other players. A few years later, a friend of mine played him against him in the FA Cup. He said he couldn't get near enough to even foul him. Superb footballer. Definitely from a way back. But we also did mention Georgie Hagi, of course, who did play at Burnham Park for Brescia in the Anglo-Italian Cup. Simon says he did a back heel volley from his own corner flag. That's how good he was.
I think they should bring back the Anglo-Italian Cup. Nice little trip to Pisa.
I like that. I love the idea of that. There is a brilliant photo, actually, of Dave Higson and the Bolton Wanderers Supporters Club outside the Leaning Tower of Pisa doing the whole Pisa thing back in the day. I've got some great ones from the Anglo-Italian Cup. Right, let's have a look at Who Are You?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Who are you?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Who are you?
Right, but no players with the letter U. So we've had to move on to V. So we're winding up here. We're getting to the very latter stages of the Who Are You journey. It's been emotional, to be honest. But are you ready? Have you got your Josh Dacres Cogliometer, which will be on eBay after we finish this, by the way?
No, I've left it in Salford, unfortunately. So it's going to have to be a... I can't think of an Isle of Man celebrity, but...
I can only think of one person from the Isle of Man, and that's Eddie Davis. And he wasn't even from the Isle of Man, he just lived there.
All right, well, there you go. Yeah, the tax haven that is the Isle of Man. We'll change it. It's the Eddie Davis-ometer.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's a few calculators knocking about in the Isle of Man. Just grab one of those and we'll do it that way. First up this week is Yanni Vianda. Do you remember Yanni Vianda?
No.
He was a Finnish goalkeeper who came on loan to Bolton in the very early noughties. I've not written it down. I think he was 2001, but don't at me. Anyway, would you like to hear how he knocked Aaron Ramsdale's career off course?
Oh, right, okay, this should be fun.
Yeah, so Aaron Ramsdale, who famously was booted out by Bolton at the age of 15 because he was too small, has also been done by another Bolton keeper. Here we go. Finnish goalkeeper, played once against Stockport in the FA Cup. He married a British model in 2013. Her name was Laura Duncan at the time. Moved into coaching with Norwich City and then to Brentford. And it was at Brentford that Jani Vianda helped make David Raya into a top-class keeper. Therefore, Arsenal bid for him, signed him, and eventually he displaced Aaron Ramsdale. That's how it happened. What do you think?
Well, there you go. There you go. Wow. I'm going to give that a... I like the kind of tedious link that goes into it, so I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah, it's tenuous rather than tedious, though, Henry. Let's give it some credit. Thanks to Stu for sending that link. Henry didn't mean to say it was tedious, but, you know. Right.
No, that did mean tenuous, yeah.
talking about tedious, here's Tedious, or Ted Vizard. How about that? The Welsh Wizard. Nice. Do you know Ted Vizard?
I know of him.
Knew of him. Well, he's struggling to know him. I think he died in about 1973. But Ted Vizard played 512 games for Bolton, 7th on the all-time list, also the oldest ever goal scorer for Bolton at 39 years and 329 days. That's a nice fact. Cameron Jerome, by the way, I think if he scored on Saturday against Portsmouth in the last minute, as we all expect him to do, he would be 6th on that list, I believe. Unless he's aged quicker in the last few days. Who knows? So I found this little quote out, which I quite liked about Ted Vizard. It's from Jimmy Ruffle, who played outside left for West Ham. I played against him in the 1923 FA Cup final. He said, Ted Vizard was very talented. He was a bit like George Best, although he made goals rather than scored them. He was very tricky. He could move from a walk into a sprint like lightning. I love that. You got this kind of like this kind of old style 20, the team of the 20s. We'll never really know how good they were, but it's lovely when people who had that memory can look back and actually give you a proper proper summation of how good these players. They could have been great. We have no real idea. We can't really compare because there's just not enough footage that exists to be able to say what type of players they were. Obviously, it was a different game and they were using different stuff. But I'd love to know how good was Ted Vizard in if he played in modern day football. Here's the next bit. He managed Swindon and then Wolves. He took Wolves to third in the league in 1947. Only to be replaced by his assistant, very controversially at the time. His assistant was a young man by the name of Stan Cullis. Now, you may or may not know him, Henry, but you definitely will have heard the name, I'm sure. But he's arguably the most successful...
Wolves.
Well, exactly. Arguably the most successful. He's like the doyen of Wolves. 3 league titles, 2 FA Cups. I think he even won something in Europe with them. Absolute managerial legend. But poor old Ted Vizard got dumped for... It must feel a bit like Ron Atkinson kind of paving the way for Alex Ferguson or that kind of thing. Or Bruce Rioch when Arsene Wenger came in. It's like you've done all the spade work, but now you go and enjoy the success.
Yeah, exactly. So, the Keith Hill to Ian Everett.
Hilly, if you're listening, we don't mean it. Okay, so the last one, Thibaut Verlinden, talking about Keith Hill. God, that was a brilliant link, and you didn't even know it. So Thibaut Verlinden.
It's as if I don't have any prep in front of me, man.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot I'd give you a prep, yeah. Belgian winger, signed from Stoke on loan, of course. The first of 9 deadline day additions on September the 2nd, 2019. 9 on the same day. The question is, though, Henry, how many can you name? This isn't even who are you. I just want to give you a bit of a quiz.
So you got Verlinden. We had...
Do you want me to give you initials?
I've got... what was he called? The midfielder. Liam Bridcutt?
Liam Bridcutt, yeah. You were there.
We also had Daryl Murphy.
Daryl Murphy, yeah.
We had Chris O'Grady.
Oh, who could forget Chris O'Grady and his calves?
Okay, you're gonna have to now give me some.
So some initials: WB. He'd played for the club before. He was a winger.
Will Buckley.
Ah, yes. JW. He was centre half. I barely remember him.
JW.
Jake.
No.
Jake Wright.
Jake Wright from Sheffield United, of course.
Yeah, that's the one. AC. He was probably the best player that Hilly signed, but never really caught on under Ian Everett.
Chickson?
No, but that was a great shout. It was a different one. He was Scottish, had a beard.
Oh, Ali Crawford.
Of course. J.E., he was a fullback and pretty good player as well, but ended up having a bit of misfortune.
Josh Earle?
Josh Emmanuel.
Oh, Emmanuel, yes. Of course.
And then J.B. J.B.?
J.B.?
I've just written down.
Right, which was...
This is the weird part of the quiz where I've written down the initials, but I can't remember the player that it was.
JB.
JB. Who could it be?
Right, this is where we're both getting on Wikipedia to try and see.
Who could it possibly be? JB. I know everybody's shouting at me. It's not Jordan Boone, that's for sure.
Oh, no. Joe Bunny?
Joe Bunny, of course it was Joe Bunny. Who could forget Joe Bunny?
Oh, Joe dear. Bunny, who yes. is Ella Toon's boyfriend.
Pass us me crystal ball. What's happening next week?
Prediction time.
Prediction time. We've got two games effectively before the next podcast comes out, but let's talk about Pompey because really what happens after Pompey... And Shrewsbury isn't on Tuesday nights. What happens after Pompey will very much dictate what happens there, I think. First of all, we said at the top of the show, Pompey, you know, they deserve to be where they are, but how good are they? How much better are they than Bolton, in your opinion? Or not?
I don't think they're necessarily better than Bolton. I think they've just been more consistent. They find a way to win probably more than Bolton.
They're
I mean, they're a good team. They deserve to be where they are, so I will give them that. But I'm not going into it thinking, like, sometimes you go, if you're third and you go in against first, you're expecting to lose, and anything else is a bonus. I am actually quite confident at home that Bolton can go and win the game. And there's still a part of me that thinks a bit more luck for Bolton this season, whether it be with injuries or the times we played games or whatever. I still think we would have closed the gap on them and perhaps been, you know, going for the title with them, or at least within, you know, it wouldn't be this game relying on them winning the league. I think it would take it to the last few games. So credit to them. If they do win on Saturday, then they would definitely deserve to win the league. But I don't know. There's just something where I think it's us or them who are the best team in the league. So,
well, I think if Pompey win on Saturday, I don't think there's no question about it. You just got to sometimes take your cap off to teams. If Pompey come and beat Bolton on Saturday, it's just one of those things. Bolton just gonna have to brush it off and try and get to where they get after that. And if it's the playoffs, fine, whatever's. But as I say, I still think there still could be twists and turns. It may not be win or bust. We may be building up to be something that isn't. I don't know. But I think this is Bolton's moment to show that they have had some misfortune. They are better than their league position shows. They've got to show it in these games. It's pointless talking about it or pontificating on it. They've got to show it. And this is... they're at home. They've got a full crowd behind them. Everybody's feeling positive. They've been given a nice little boost in midweek from Derby. There's no with the exception of potentially Deion Charles being back and fit and such like, we don't know whether that's going to be the case. It would be lovely if he was to play some sort of part and give another boost to things. But there's very little else that can be going for them at this moment in time. It's all there for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is it now, is that it is the last chance. We get into the final few games of the season. Bolton are in a position where if they win them all, they get promoted. And it's got to that point. It's not do or die on Saturday, but if Derby win and we suddenly then go back to being 5 points behind them, best you can then hope for with two games to go is level on games and 2 points away from them. So for Bolton, it just means that they've got to win. They've got to then re-energise and and get the mindset right for the next two games. But if Bolton win our next three games, we could be promoted. Mm. Or we're at least going into that last game at Peterborough knowing that Peterborough have to beat us.
Yeah.
And Derby have to hope that we lose. So, we'll wait and see, but it's now in their own hands, and it's they've got to. This may be harsh, and I'm sure if anyone from the club's listening to this, they may roll their eyes, but I think they've got to prove it to the fans that they can win these big games.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And this is the biggest game of the season, and if they win, suddenly they will be heavy favourites to go up. And who knows, Mark? Portsmouth could lose the remainder of their games and we could win the league. You never know. But that might be ultra positive. But yeah, it's down to the players to show what they made of.
Yeah, I mean, I highly doubt that. I have honestly, and I may have even mentioned on here, I honestly have been expecting Pompey to trip up. And I think it's to their great credit that they haven't. They've ground out results again, you know. One thing, though, before we have a prediction on this game, one little undercurrent that seems to have happened on social media is a couple of collection of quotes from an Australian striker, Mr. Yenge, about Santos. Now, I hadn't seen these, and these certainly weren't brought to my attention back when the two teams met earlier this season. I don't know who. Just to explain, have you seen the video I'm on about, for starters, Henry? That would help.
Yeah.
So you explain what basically it is?
Yeah, basically, the guy, Yenge, who's the Australian fellow who scored. Did he score one or two against us? I can't remember.
He scored one.
No, one, wasn't it? Yeah. So I think in his interview after the game, he did two interviews after the game, one with Sky and one with like a fan channel. And they asked him about, they asked him about Santos, and he was like, oh, before the game, it's Santos this, Santos that, Santos is strong. How are you going to deal with Santos? And he just basically says, well, he didn't lay a glove on me. So, I'm sure Rico has seen that. And I think if he gets the opportunity, I don't know whether it'll be as much of as he did to Cosgrove of shoulder barging him into row F or row G, but I'm sure he'll like to just have his moment where he gets him, push, you know, shoulder barges him off the ball and walks away with it. I'm sure he'll love that moment just to remind him of who he is.
If I'm not mistaken, at one stage he says, the fan says you've handled him well, and he said, yeah, it was a piece of toast. Now,
yeah, which
he meant cake. Why did he say toast?
Yeah, I mean, what could that even mean, a piece of toast? Like,
I mean, I know, like, you have him on toast, I suppose that's the same, but I'm pretty sure he said, yeah, it was a piece of toast. Unless that's an Australian thing that I'm just not getting. It may be. Any of our Australian listeners, please, you know, contact me and tell me that that's a thing. That you say all sorts of weird stuff over there.
Yeah, well, I wonder if Geoffin Jones might have had a word with him and asked him to explain what a piece of toast is. But, I hope that Santos has seen it. I'm sure he has. I'm sure the players are winding him up about it. And Rico will go and prove what he's worth.
Well, we shall see. I'm sure I can make mention of it at some stage this afternoon when we talk to the players. I think I'm speaking to Nat Ogbetta this afternoon, so that would be nice too. He's so smiley. What a pleasant chap he is, by the way. Really, really top guy. Anyway, we're gonna need. This is prediction time, and famously with prediction time, we often don't make a prediction. So let's try and renege against that. Let's make a prediction. Let's say what we think is going to happen.
2-0 Bolton.
Well, that was quick.
2-0 Bolton. 2-0 Bolton. Derby will draw, and then we'll be level on points and goal difference with them going into that Shrewsbury game.
Here's my prediction: all three games end in draws. Derby draw. Bolton draw against Pompey, and Peterborough draw against Oxford. Derby have got Leighton Orient, and that's right, yeah. So all three games end in draws, and we move on. But Bolton, crucially, then go into a home game against Shrewsbury, and then another one against Port Vale. Two ones that, you know, you'd think they were quite upbeat about winning. That's where they get the edge. That's my philosophy.
Well, let's wait and see. I've got a funny feeling that Bolton get to a point where Derby can't get to us after that Port Vale game.
Sorry, we're keeping you up, Henry.
it's midnight here, Mark, in the Isle of Man. Did you not know? I know it's 10 a.m. where you are, but it's midnight here.
We've done 72 minutes on the buff, and Henry needs a nap. Okay, right. So we'll let Henry go and enjoy the last few hours of his time in his evil lair on the Isle of Man before he goes and heads out again. But please join us next week for what we hope will be another very positive podcast, and hopefully a couple of wins for Wanderers. You know, it could be all tied up. Could be mapping the course out to the Championship, or conversely, we might have to bring out the sad violin buff music for the beginning of the podcast, and it might be all woe is us. Who knows how it's going to be? There's going to be more twists and turns. That's all I can tell you for sure.
There is, but I'm pretty confident at the very, very least that we'll have a home second leg in the playoffs. So at least that's an improvement on last year.
If that's the only straw we're left clutching at the end, then so be it. Okay, I've been Mark Isles.
I've been Henry Hewitt.
And this has been Clutching at Straws, I mean the buff.